Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Welcome to Hollywood and Levine. I am Ken Levine, your podcast host. This is part two of my two-part interview with casting director John Levy. Now, John Levy, for 35 years, has been casting iconic shows such as The West Wing and ER. And if you missed part one, after you listen to this, go back and check that out. I think you will, because this is a fascinating interview and a very interesting and candid guest. If you are an actor and you want to know what it is really like out there, how you get jobs, and what the world is like in television casting today, 2022, this is the guy to check out. He also has a book that is available on Amazon. It's called Right for the Role, Breakdowns, Breakups, and Breakthroughs from 35 Years of Casting Iconic TV Shows. His name is John Levy. It's spelled L-E-V-E-Y. So, coming up right now, part two with John Levy, right here on Hollywood and Levine. What are you looking for when an actor comes to read for you?
I guess I touched on it a little bit. I'm looking for training. I'm looking for, I think we want our characters on television to be a little more fabulous than we are in our real lives.
That's easy in my case.
Yeah, me too. So they have to have something arresting about the way they look. It doesn't have to be conventional beauty or handsomeness, but they have to be somebody you're happy to be watching, charisma. They have to be brave. They have to be willing. They also have to know themselves, because an actor is unlike a piano player. They are the instrument and the player at the same time. And so they have to have an acute understanding of who they are and what they seem like. And since they draw on their own experiences and their own imaginations, they have to be the kind of people who go out into the world and have a lot of experiences, diverse experiences, and have been willing to jump out of their comfort zone and be brave. So I'm looking for that kind of immediacy, that kind of electric humanity, that kind of special charisma that, that I guess we first learned about as audiences ourselves, watching the movies and television shows of our childhood, but also maybe we first heard the word charisma associated with John F. Kennedy and his election to the presidency in 1960.
Can that X factor, that charisma, be taught, or is it just something that you're lucky to be born with, and if you just don't have it, you just don't have it?
Well, I think it can be enhanced. And I think it can be released, but I don't think it can be taught. If you don't got it, then you end up being a casting director or a writer or something else.
And you end up becoming us.
Yeah, precisely.
What are some of the mistakes that actors make in auditions?
Well, they're rude. They're unprepared. They're self-aggrandizing without any reason. They make excuses. They overstep their relationship with you. It's like I've said many times, if you come to my home for a small cocktail party and it's the first time you've been there and you comment on how dreadful my taste in art is, that's really not appropriate. But if you've been at my house 50 times and you're an art dealer, and you think, hey, John, that painting would look a lot better in your bedroom than in your living room, then that's appreciated. Knowing what the boundaries of your relationship are, and really simple manners and professionalism, preparation.
What about dressing the part? What are your feelings about when actors come in dressed as a pirate or whatever?
Well, I think that's sort of unnecessary. I don't think you should come straight from the golf course if you're reading for a lawyer doing his summation speech. Might be a good idea to have a jacket and tie on. But, I don't think it's necessary. We have a wonderful costumer on the shows that I've worked on. Lynn Paolo is her name. And she'll put you in the right clothes when you get the job. So, you don't want to dress completely wrong. If the part calls for some element of sexuality, you don't want to wear a Peter Pan collar and a ankle length skirt like an Amish lady. But,
right.
But you also don't want to, even if the part calls for some kind of nudity and simulated sex, you don't want to do that.
right.
Get the job and do that with the intimacy coordinator in a closed set.
Yeah, that brings up a good point too, because people talk about the casting couch, but when you get to the level of network television, it's all professional. As a producer, when I'm in a casting session, I'm never in a casting session by myself. There's always the casting director, the person who's reading with the actor. Oftentimes, there's a studio person. And, there is a level of professionalism that that if you're an actor and you find yourself in a situation that is not that, run.
Yeah. Well, clearly over the last decade, it's been revealed that there are disgusting, amoral, can I say shitheads?
Sure you can.
In our business, who have preyed upon vulnerable and inexperienced and maybe, ambitious and stupid actors. I would never go to a hotel room to meet anybody I didn't know.
Exactly.
I would never have a meeting on Sunday night at 10:30 that starts in a hotel restaurant. and as you say, those of us, I don't think casting couches have ever really involved casting directors. I think occasionally executives, I know now that executives and producers and directors have, in fact, taken advantage of vulnerable people for their power needs and their sexual needs. And it appalls me, and it's despicable.
I want to talk about your book now. You wrote a book, which is basically a memoir called Right for the Role, which is due to be released on September 15th. Talk about the book.
Thank you. I'd be happy to. I'm very proud of it. It was a labor of legacy. I'm, you know, certainly towards the end of working full time. And so I wanted to put down on paper the stories and the observations that have been made available to me through this 35 plus years of casting and being greatly lucky and also living up to that luck to be involved with iconic television shows, back to China Beach, ER, The West Wing, Third Watch, Shameless, Southland, Animal Kingdom, Growing Pains, where Leonardo DiCaprio joined the cast, Head of the Class, where we added many people of color long before that started to be mandated. I met a woman who will be a friend of mine for the rest of my life, Trudy Roth, who is a writer. And I had actually done a podcast for an acting teacher in town, and she had written a book with Trudy, and she said to me after we got off the Zoom that, gee, John, your stories are kind of funny, and you can talk, and maybe you ought to write a book about your career. And I thought, well, that might be interesting. So I met with Trudy, and she gave me an assignment to send her a memory every day, more than one, if I had more than one. And so we had a Zoom and email relationship for quite a number of months. And it sort of evolved into, the stories of the shows that I've been associated with, which I just kind of listed.
And we'll talk about it in more detail.
Great.
Yeah, because I want to get into some of those shows.
It also became clear that that through my career, I was able to find myself, who I am and what I have to offer and what I don't have and who I'm not. And so I was able to find the role that I was right for, hence the title, Right for the Role. And that was a great gift. And that the other sort of theme of the book is this whole concept of collaboration and cooperation and mutuality and respect and affection and friendship that can develop out of being an effective part of a team. And so you Right for the Role is kind of the story of someone going from never having heard of a casting director to becoming one, to becoming a good one, to becoming part of a team that worked together for a long period of time and had remarkable success that we all could be proud of and that nobody takes exclusive credit for.
So let's start with ER. What I remember about that show was that when you were putting together the pilot, there was resistance on the part of NBC. Was it Don Ohmeyer? It's like somebody who was very high up in NBC hated the show and the fact that it was Spielberg and John and a lot of other people involved in it. They kind of had to go with it. Yeah, Michael Crichton.
Yeah, I think there was a lot of resistance to the show from NBC, and certainly Don Ohlmeyer was there during the casting and played an instrumental role. Actually, in some ways, a very positive role. He was the one who insisted that once we had George and Anthony Edwards and Sherry Stringfield, that he didn't feel we had the part that ended up being played by Eric LaSalle, and basically said, "Damn you with faint praise! You can have the actor you have brought in today, but I think you can do better." And we went out and got Eric, who was somebody I had been chasing for a long time for the part. But at the time, my boss Barbara Miller kind of had a rule that those, all of us casting people at Warner Brothers, weren't allowed to compete with each other for a particular actor. And Eric was already high on somebody else's list for a pilot.
It's something else you have to contend with.
Yeah. Nonsense.
Yeah.
But, you know, it turned out that it was a good idea. And so actually Eric was cast on, I think, day three of the shoot, as they kept having to adjust the schedule so that they didn't get to any stuff that he had to shoot. But it was a fantastic process, and it was so exciting. I think, you know, John Wells certainly took Crichton's script, which frequently just identified people as doctor, nurse, paramedic. And we had to try to figure out at the beginning, is the nurse on page 14 the same as the nurse on page 52? you know, it was really a chaos thing. And it was before cell phones and emails and texts and all of that technology. And so that was both good and not so good, because we were left to our own devices a lot. And it turned out that director Rod Holcomb, executive producer and rewriter John Wells, and even Crichton, who came to the one audition during the process when we read Noah Wyle, and laughed his head off at Noah failing to find a vein in my arm while trying desperately to take blood for the first time. you know, it was just so exciting and so much fun. And you know, Anthony Edwards just embodied. I tell a story in the book where I'm sitting in Barbara Miller's office and we're watching dailies of the pilot. And she calls out to her assistant and says, call my doctor's office, cancel my appointment. I'm going to go see Mark Green instead. And, you know, Anthony Edwards was the kind of doctor that, and as we've discovered in the pandemic, that our medical professional, our healthcare people are really heroes. And that's what ER was about heroism. And you know, and it was also about primary care. It debuted at the same time as Chicago Hope. Their pilot episode was about separating conjoined twins at birth. Ours was about primary care for poor people who didn't have insurance. And, you know, rich people don't go to the ER. They go to their doctor. They only go to their ER if they really had an emergency.
Yeah. And, you know, there was a pace and an energy to that show that was, you know, just a shot of adrenaline every week. There was also great chemistry with Juliana Margulies and George Clooney. Did that just sort of happen, or was that kind of by design?
Well, with all due respect, I don't think there's a woman on the planet who couldn't develop chemistry with George. and I'm not sure there are a great many men who couldn't develop chemistry with Juliana. They're both charismatic, open, brave, wonderful, vulnerable, funny actors, and they brought that. But, you know, in the great tradition of Hill Street Blues, when Michael Warren and Charlie Haid were both shot at the end, and then everybody loved them so much they had remarkable recoveries, you probably remember that Juliana's character attempted suicide in the pilot of ER.
That's right. I had forgotten that.
While it wasn't explicitly stated that she succeeded, it was implied pretty heavily. And because of the chemistry that you referenced between George and Juliana and our audience, the testing was just crazy through the roof for all of it, for the pace and the energy and the urgency, and also for the potential of romance that those two brought to it.
Did you have any idea? I'm sure you were very proud of the show and thought that the show would do well. Did you have any idea the phenomena that it became and the ratings that it... There is never, ever going to be another show on television that will come close to the weekly ratings that ER got during its heyday.
Yeah, I agree with you. once upon a time, more than 40 million people watched ER on Thursday night at 10 o'clock and or 9 Central or whatever. And that was before you could access it whenever you damn
right.
well please.
They had to actually watch it. Yeah,
it was appointment television. And I think and 40 million is more than in those days. That number of people didn't vote in non-presidential years. It was ridiculous and unprecedented. And of course, I didn't have any idea that that would happen. I thought it was going to be, you know, when we started seeing it, it emerged before our eyes. Everybody was right for their role. Rod Holcomb did a spectacular job developing the visual style. Yeah. Funny enough, when you go back and look at the pilot years later, mm-hmm. it seems slow compared to how fast it got. Uh-huh. I think it's probably not that I have experience with this, but it's kind of like drugs. I think you have to keep upping the dose or you don't get off.
Yeah. Yeah. Just keep that adrenaline pumping.
Yep.
So West Wing, you cast the pilot of West Wing?
I cast the pilot and the first two seasons of West Wing. And then the only time in my career I asked out, and it might seem like a crazy thing to have done because it was again catapulting into the stratosphere of success. But it just wasn't – I had a great time doing the pilot and the first two seasons, but it was a chaotic production. Aaron was never quite able to meet deadlines with scripts. And so you were doing what should have been 8 days work in 6 hours sometimes. And it was enough to drive you crazy.
Yeah. You know, that's another point. And people don't realize that when scripts are done, they have to be ready to go several days or a week before you actually go into production. You know, you need to give the casting director time to find the people. You need to give the production people time to build the sets. And yeah. if it's always at the last second, it has to be really chaotic. Well, I want to ask you a question about West Wing and Allison Janney. A year before you guys did West Wing, I was directing a show in New York for NBC. It was a sitcom called Late Line. And we used Allison as a guest star in one episode. And at the time, she had primarily just been doing theater in New York. She was fantastic in the show. And I just wonder if... did that put her on the NBC radar? Did you get a call from NBC saying, here's somebody that you need to look at, or you found her independently?
Actually, my second chair and dear friend Kevin Scott spent hours and hours and hours watching film and tape of actors that we didn't know. And he saw her opposite heavy hitters in one scene parts in feature films. And thought she could hold her own against anybody, and that she was so uniquely talented and exuded so much intelligence as well as humor, and was a willing. There was a scene where she had to, she was on a treadmill, mm-hmm. and she fell off the treadmill while somebody else was on the next treadmill, and we just laughed, hollered ourselves to death. No, we did not get a call from NBC. I wish I could say thank you to you.
Hey, I didn't discover her. The casting director of the show in New York brought her in. But
yeah.
Again, one of those people where you just see her and you just go, wow, there's something special here.
There's nobody else like her.
Yeah.
And that's been established, reestablished, proven, reproven. Time and again, there's nothing she can't do. But given, you know, when we talked earlier about supervision and possible interference or whatever, and I'm a great believer in diversity and inclusivity long before it was mandated, ER is filled with people of color, both in the patients and on the medical staff.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't need to be told to do that. We did it on our own. But the person who tested opposite Allison at the network for The West Wing is the fantastic actress C.C.H. Pounder, an African-American
sure.
woman.
Mm-hmm.
And
great on The Shield.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Great on lots, on almost everything she's ever done.
Mm-hmm.
I think that if we had done the pilot in 2020, that Cece would have gotten the part and she would have been good, but we would have been missing out on what Allison gave us.
Who are some of the people who read for West Wing or who tested for West Wing who didn't get it?
Well, besides CCH Pounder, I say in the book, Right for the Role, that the best audition I've ever seen that didn't get the job was Eugene. Does he say Levy or Levy?
Levy.
Don't even know.
Yeah, Levy.
Eugene Levy read opposite Richard Schiff for Toby Ziegler. And it was not a hard decision because, again, Richard is that grumpy, wonderful guy who can see all sides of every issue, and so he can't make up his mind about anything. Eugene was fabulous, but Richard was writer.
Yeah. What about for the Martin Sheen part? Were there any other presidents considered?
Yeah, you know, we had originally, you know, I think if the show had turned out the way it did turn out and it involved the president as much as it did, it might have been called the Oval Office rather than the West Wing. It was originally conceived to be about the staff, with the president having sort of a tangential role.
Mm-hmm.
And a wonderful musical theater actor named John Cullum read for the president. We also thought about Alan Alda. We actually also thought very seriously about Sidney Poitier.
Wow.
And then all of a sudden, Martin's name came up. And none of those, I mean, Cullum read. Somebody else may have read as well, and I've forgotten who it was at the moment. But when Martin's name came up, he had, of course, appeared as the sort of Bobby Kennedy role in The American President that Aaron had written.
Mm-hmm.
So Aaron knew him well. And God, I've been a fan of his all the way back to Badlands with Sissy Spacek, who I blame for my first and second marriages. actually, I'm only married once, my second long-term relationship.
Uh-huh.
But I had loved Martin as James Dean. And so, and I'd loved him for his anti-nuclear. I think he's the only actor I've ever excused from a call so that because he had been arrested at a nuclear plant, protesting. Martin's a great, great actor. And it fell into place so that we had, you know, we had everything we needed. It was spectacular. It was a balanced, you know, Brad Whitford and Rob Lowe. It was such a deep cast that, you know, if they could walk and talk, they certainly balanced each other out and had great chemistry. It was fantastic.
Yeah, I guess that would have to be one of the questions during the audition. Can you walk and deliver lines?
Yeah, and you don't actually see that because it's impossible to create that in a office space.
Right.
The other thing that was really different about that is that Aaron reads with everybody. And so my role was diminished in that respect because I in those days took great pride in reading helping actors by being present in the moment.
He's kind of a frustrated actor, isn't he?
I don't know if he's frustrated. I think he is an actor. And I don't know. I love Aaron. He's a crazy, wonderful guy. And it was really exciting to work with both him and Tommy Schlamme, who I had worked with on ER. And he directed the live episode. I've just been so blessed to be able to collaborate with great artists, actors, directors, writers. It's been so special.
Okay, before you go, I got to ask you about Animal Planet. So your casting director, Animal Kingdom. So do they say we need a giraffe who can sing and they call you? I mean, who are you casting?
No, I didn't do Animal Planet. I do Animal Kingdom, the family crime drama based on the Australian film.
Oh, okay. All right, because I'm looking at it and I'm going, you know, we need a mongoose who can do noir.
No, I don't do babies and I don't do animals.
Oh, yeah, doing kids has to be rough.
Oh, it's very rough. And it's kind of amazing because eventually, after lots of hard work and filtering, the kid that is the part emerges. On Shameless, which we really haven't talked about, some of those kids were 9 years old when they came into that show. And they went to the W.H. Macy School of Acting and learned on the job and evolved from just kids with the right quality and the right look to reliable, talented, skilled actors.
Yeah, you get to watch them grow up.
Yep.
Yeah. So again, the book is called Right for the Role, and it is available on September 15th. John, thank you so much. This has really been great.
Oh, it's my pleasure and a delight to meet you. And your podcast name is among the greatest jokes that I've ever heard.
I'll appreciate it.
Thank
Sell
you
a lot
very
of books.
Much.
See you on the bestsellers list.
No, I hope so. That would be lovely.
Was I right? What a great guest, John Levy. And once again, his book, which is available on Amazon, is called Right for the Role, Breakdowns, Breakups, and Breakthroughs from 35 Years of Casting Iconic TV Shows. Our thanks, as always, to Adam and Susie Meister-Butler, to Howard Hoffman, John Wolford, Bruce, and Jason Miller. You can follow me on Twitter at Ken Levine. I am also on Instagram, Hollywood and Levine. And don't forget, you can still reach me. You can email me at HollywoodLevine@Outlook.com. That's HollywoodLevine@Outlook.com. Come back next week for more fun. Thanks so much for listening. Bye-bye. Hollywood and Levine.